By definition, ambassadors are representatives of their sovereign and their nation. We have the privilege to discuss and represent our sovereign, Jesus Christ, and his kingdom for his glory. Join us as we seek him first. Welcome to Ambassador Talks.
Hello and welcome to another edition of Ambassador Talks. Ambassador Talks exists to glorify God by pursuing truth in God's word and applying it to the issues and challenges that are facing the church today. Ambassador Talks is brought to you by Ambassador Baptist Church of Hudson, North Carolina. For more information about the church, visit www.ambassadorbaptistchurch.org. I'm the host today, Nathan Phillips, and Pastor Robert Setzer is on the mics with me. Matt is out tending to a sick little one today, but there is a very important topic that we're going to talk about today, and it's a very important episode for us as well. We're going to talk about something that has been happening for years in the American culture and how it slithered its way into the churches in our country. We're talking about secularization. We have talked about this topic a couple times in a couple different ways, and today is going to be no different. We're going to talk about it in a different light and reference, you know, some things that we've talked about maybe weeks ago. But, Pastor, you brought to our attention a podcast of Albert Mohler called Thinking in Public. It's about an hour-long podcast that he does in just a discussion-type format along the lines of this topic of post-Christian America. And we'll weigh in and talk about a couple of different things here. But why don't we start off by talking about post-Christian and what that is, Pastor. We've talked about it a little bit in past episodes, so let's hash that out and talk about it a little bit.
Okay, sounds good. Well, first of all, let's lay this premise down. When we say post-Christian culture, we are not saying that there's no churches in America. We're not saying that there is not any Christianity in America. Basically, as Dr. Mohler defined it, he says, our culture lacks a binding authority, where at one time, the church and Christianity, biblical theology, would have been the binding authority. It would have laid the foundation of proper, respectful public discourse. And so we have lost that today. And we might tag on to the concept of the post-Christian culture the fact that many people in our churches today have a rather thin, if you would allow me that use of that word, a thin understanding of their theology and of their times. In other words, can they defend? Can they announce what they believe, and can they defend what they believe?
Yeah, I think that's accurate. You know, a couple of weeks ago, we kind of talked about it a little bit, and I was a little bit dismissive, and you know, always late to the party as I am, but you know, it's referenced in a lot of different writings in the podcast that we're talking about here. They, you know, they went as far back as Nietzsche and you know, who may have been the first post-Christian person who said it aloud anyway. And but you have people, you know, in the early 1900s and you know, surely even later than that, as we've, you know, kind of talked about this topic even more. But, you know, I was a little bit dismissive probably at first and just, you know, thinking along the lines of all of these labels and things like that. And sometimes I'm resistant to that. But the more I think about it, Pastor, I'm going to have to agree that we are probably post-Christian. And that is, for lack of a better way to talk about it, you know, I think we have to attach some type of adjective, some type of meaning to you know, the kind of the era that we're in. And we're going to talk about a lot of different things, but you can definitely see it with you know, legal matters, with laws that have been passed that we're going to talk about, things like that. We've hit on a lot of things in past weeks as well, but when you look at it as a whole, you're exactly right. I think we've lost a lot of theology. We've lost a lot of apologetics in recent time. We can't defend properly, and you know, we've not made it attractive. I saw one of my seminary professors online talking about how we're going to have to make apologetics more attractive.
Absolutely.
And more accessible. It tends to be very heady and very wordy sometimes, and it turns some people off. And I think he's got a good point there. We've failed the culture as Christians in a lot of different respects, and we can talk about more of that later. But I think as just a way of intro, I think we've definitely entered into a post-Christian society, whether we want to admit it or not.
You know, something that I think should be alarming to us, Rod Dreher, in his book, The Benedict Option, mentioned this. He said, we're on the edge of the collapse of Western civilization. And he referenced back to the time of the fall of the Roman Empire. Well, it didn't mean that the Roman Empire, or that the cities and the people and the stores and et cetera ceased to exist, but the empire did. And to think about the fact of, is that possible that we're on the edge of the collapse of the Western civilization? You know, he referenced another book by a man named Alistair MacIntyre, who wrote a book, After Virtue. And MacIntyre there provided a rather bleak view of the state of modern moral discourse, regarding it as failing to be rational and failing to admit to being irrational. And I think we're literally seeing that before our very eyes, between the confrontation in Congress, the media, the presidency. And then you go out from that, Nathan, to a lot of the secular college campuses, which at one time, when you think about the University of California at Berkeley in the 60s, would probably have been the epicenter of kind of a free speech movement, like, the right to stand up and say what you believe. And it has completely turned upside down and reversed course in our current day.
Yeah, I mean, university used to, it was supposed to mean unified diversity, We've gotten away. I mean, we've said it before, but, Harvard, Princeton, I mean, Jonathan Edwards was the president of Princeton, for goodness sake. I mean, it is something in our society that we were built upon as far as universities and things like that go. That's another topic that is really hot nowadays, and it goes right along with this, was America a Christian nation? Was it ever? I've seen even some Christians online, argue that, America never was a Christian nation and things like that. And I think that's really what's underlying here in this argument, this topic of post-Christian. I don't know if that all the way matters as far as whether we were a Christian nation or not. I don't know that Jesus probably concerned himself too much with, what kind of nation he was ministering under. I don't think that affected his ministry any, but, it's just one of these things that we've got to talk about and got to consider as we think forward for the church in America.
Right. I don't think, I think that's maybe the phrase could be phrased better. I don't know that we were a Christian nation per se, mm-hmm. because when you look at the early foundations of our nation, you were looking, at one stage at 13 colonies, and if you go back to the whole aspect of the Puritans and those in Boston, that point may could have been made in early New England was extreme Christian foundation. The nation as a whole, I think we certainly had the moral underpinnings of biblical Christianity that guided our reasoning, our rationales, our discourse, and foundation for our government.
I think what kind of flips people's triggers, I guess, is the Christian nation term, like you said, the phrase. I think the big thing for us is that worldview has changed.
Correct.
When the country was founded, we had a Christian worldview. Whether or not it was a Christian nation or not, is really beside the point. The point is that the worldview was there, that there was a God that created, and there was a God that created morals, and there was a responsibility to those morals that we had to act on as a country, and we had to obey those moral laws. And so what we've got now is just a complete discreditation of biblical morality and that worldview. So, you know, as we look at worldview and how that's changing, you know, I think that's what's bringing us to a post-Christian society, that people don't consider those morals to be any type of binding authority, like we've talked about.
You're correct. We're in a rather precarious situation. We're in a place in America that I don't think we've ever seen before since the founding of our nation. And as one person brought out, this did not all start with the 1960s. A lot of times, things are referenced back about how good it was before the 60s. Well, no, this has been going on. The seeds of this have been laid long before the 1960s. In the 60s and early 70s, we simply saw it bearing fruit. The tree was putting on the fruit, and we are now really eating of that fruit. So these seeds of a post-Christian culture have been planted long, long ago. You know, it was referenced, Nathan, I'd like you to weigh in on this right here, that the Waterloo of our current cultural decline was the Obergefell versus Hodges decision there in Texas in 2015, a very landmark Supreme Court case, and a 5-4 decision, matter of fact, that granted the right to marry to same-sex couples based upon pretty much the 14th Amendment.
I think it did and was a very landmark spot in our culture. It almost, like they said in the podcast we've been referencing, that was kind of the point that everything has become hostile. After that decision, things have been hostile towards Christianity. It's like, well, that's not real Christianity. You can't say homosexuality is wrong because, you know, that's not loving and that's not the way Christ would have saw it, and things like that, and then they attack us with those type things, and then try to place some type of morality on us, although I don't know where they're getting the origin of that from. I like the point that they were talking about in the books and in the podcast, that you could probably almost trace it back to no-fault divorce.
Yes.
In the 80s, and we've talked about that in the past on the podcast, and I think that is another landmark. You could maybe a 1A and a 1B, the no-fault divorce being the 1A, and how that was such a major thing for us. It undermines marriage, it undermines a lot of different things, but then you fast forward to 2015 with this case, and you've got us with no leg to stand on.
And, you know, so many people, and they miss the point, Nathan. It's not that we're not forgiving. That is not right. What even is being discussed. And we know that divorce has hit many in the Christian church. And certainly God is forgiving. That is the point. The point being made was, here you've got same-sex couples coming along several years back and saying, hey, we want the same thing you have got. And then with such an influx of flood, an acceptance even of divorce and remarriage, and in some cases, divorce and remarriage, you know, almost like serial polygamy, except we go through the legalities, we get rid of one to pick up another. And then we had given up the moral high ground. We really didn't have an apologetic answer to render to them. We don't believe it. We don't believe it. We don't believe it. The Bible doesn't teach it. And so... You're absolutely right. We have got ourselves into a mess.
Yeah, and I mean, and that all plays into the fact of this post-Christian, you know, mindset that we've lost track of, you know, what the Bible teaches and its morality there. There's some other, you know, interesting things that's happened over the past couple of years, and I mean, you've got HB, you know, 2, you've got you know, the NFL and things like this that is threatening pulling sports venues and things like that. Let's talk a little bit about, you know, I guess big business and how they have decided for and against Christians throughout the years. You know, I mean, it seems like now they've kind of chosen a side or maybe they always had that side, but it seems like they've you know, definitely decided against Christians in America as well.
Well, you're absolutely right. And you just referenced a point just a moment ago. The NFL has made threats towards the state of Texas. And you have the NCAA, who has basically boycotted or threatened to boycott. Well, they actually did, I suppose. North Carolina over the over our transgender policy. And really, HB2, all it did was simply restate what we already have encoded as law in North Carolina. And so that was used against us. Then you have the whole situation out in Oregon. The lady who basically she had already served and glad and had no problem, you know, serving, doing flowers up for a gay gentleman. And yet when it came time, he wanted to do, and it really wasn't even a marriage, because at that time it was not allowed, I think, in Oregon or Washington State. And it was some kind of a celebration. And she did not want to participate in that. And so now she is sued and evidently facing a rather serious lawsuit, maybe the loss of her business. You have others who didn't, they would serve maybe a part of their business, for example, cupcakes in a business. They didn't want to do a wedding cake for gay couples, so they basically lost their business. And it's like, wait a minute, these people are saying this is a part, a core of our religious beliefs. We've got freedom of religion, and yet the government's coming in saying, forget that. We'll define for you what religion is. You can't do that. If you're going to make one cake for one person, you make it for everybody, and right on down the line.
And this goes right along with, you know, the subject of the religious right and things like that in the past, and how, you know, maybe faultily, you know, thought that if we captured the courts and captured the, you know, Senate seats and things like that, that we could, you know, be Christian once again or change the laws, and then that would change culture. What, you know, Dr. Moeller and Drew were pointing out, Dr. Drew, that they, you know, that was maybe a little mistaken that, you know, politics doesn't shape culture. Culture shapes politics.
That's it. That's it.
And we lost that kind of war. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it's completely over, but I think, you know, it's on its last legs at least. We've lost the culture war, and now we're kind of got our head in our hands thinking, you know, we thought we could, you know, win another way and protect our laws and protect our culture, but that's not what happened.
And, you know, Nathan, for anybody who may be listening to us right now, I am a very strong advocate, you know, for being politically involved. You know, I think we live in a democratic republic. We absolutely must go vote, but we cannot think that merely voting in the right candidates will resolve our cultural malaise and decline. We also, as we're looking outwardly, we must look inwardly within our churches. Are we adequately religiously educating our young people?
I think that's the point. That's the crux of the matter for me. And I mean, it's what I have a passion for anyway, is teaching apologetics and teaching doctrine and theology. I mean, that's my wheelhouse. But I think, and that's just me speaking, but I think that's where we failed miserably as a church, as a whole, just church in general, is that we've gone to a lot of seeker-sensitive stuff, and I hate to even use that term because that brings up a host of emotions, but that's what it is. I mean, we're seeker-friendly. We're, you know, just trying to do what everybody likes and try to get the crowds, and there's certainly, I mean, you have to have people to preach to change their lives, of course, but losing...
No, you hit on something very important. You said, get the crowds. Yeah. That is very significant, because I think we believe if we can simply get them within the doors of the church, sit down in the pew, that we've won half the battle. We may have won one-tenth of the battle. I think a lot of times we think, if I can just get these kids, these adults, these people, these unchurched, to say this prayer with me, now we're done. And yet it was our Lord Jesus Christ who in the Great Commission said, make disciples. Mm. It's much more than making a prayer.
I think church has become a lot like movies and TV shows, in the sense is that if you cater to the crowds, you cater to what is popular and what people are going to like, well, people change what they like. So you've got to change what you do all the time and constantly be changing constantly. And there's nothing wrong with that. I'm all for, for lack of a better term, contemporary things. I'm all for things that engage the culture and are relevant. I'm all for that. But I'm also for creeds and doxologies and hymns and theology that we should be teaching and apologetics.
And history. And a heritage that goes back to the first century we must not forget and neglect and disdain.
And that's something that we've, started doing more recently is, a confession, a creedal type confession.
Right.
We talked in the, past weeks about creeds and how they're very, very important. We're going to have to teach our kids, the upcoming generations, and even the old folk that may not have been, accustomed to the creeds and things like that. We're going to have to preserve our legacy. Our legacy may not be the right term, but our history as Christians and what we believe, why we believe it. And I think it's very important for us to do, Pastor. It may be the most important thing we can do.
Is it fair to say that too many, I'm not indicting everybody. I have no right, no ground to indict anybody. I have enough problems of my own.
Of course.
But I'm afraid that many times that we're more excited about engaging people emotionally in our church services than we are intellectually. And challenging them to think. Solomon said, much studies awareness of the flesh. It's hard to think.
Mm-hmm.
So.
You look at the teachings of Jesus, you think he was a thinking teacher.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of things you could say. I mean, he was definitely empathetic. He was definitely passionate. He was definitely compassionate. And all of these things that we need to seek to strive for. But he taught some hard things and some hard things to think about. And you had to, pay attention to the parables and things like that. And he taught theology. He taught a lot of things that I think we have to keep in mind as we teach and we, preach through to our congregations and things like that.
Dreyer referenced he did not give the name of the school nor the professor, but he had quoted a professor from an evangelical college that gave a rather grim view for the success of their students who came from evangelical homes. And he said many of them had come from the kind of quote-unquote youth group culture where their experience was just give them fun. Let's get them through the front door. Mm. Show them a good time.
Yeah.
And I'm not indicting all churches by no stretch. And I'm just simply saying we might need to check ourselves a little bit to see what is constituting ministry.
We spent some time here on the podcast talking about evangelicalism. And a lot of people were probably thinking, why spend that much time? Why spend that many episodes? It's something that has to be talked about and hashed out because as they were talking in this, in these books, in these radio programs, that evangelicalism may not be able to, survive it.
Right.
What do you think about that?
And, and we use that term, Nathan, in a very broad sense, basically describing those who subscribe to the core beliefs of the Bible, differentiating ourselves from the Catholic church, et cetera, et cetera. And so that's why we're using the word evangelicalism. We don't want to just simply come in here and talk only about Baptist or Independent Baptist or et cetera, et cetera. Our nation's much larger than that, right there. But you are right. Moeller himself said he did not think evangelicalism has sufficient resources for a thick enough Christianity to survive this epic or much beyond it. Modern evangelicalism, he felt like, lacked theological substance, of which I could not really disagree.
Yeah, and as we were talking, before, Dreher, when he says, when I see evangelicals, I see people who love the Lord but are also susceptible to every trend that comes along.
Yes.
That's a dangerous place to be.
It is.
As we wind down here, the thing about that was interesting as well was Muller working on an upcoming book, and he's talking about the stages of secularism. So you want to talk about that a little bit?
Well, yeah, he just simply mentions in this upcoming book that he has got, he referenced about four things he said there in his concepts, the four stages of secularism being secular ascendance, number two, secular triumphalism, three, secular aggression. In other words, they desire to shut down Christian discussion, and number four, secular exhaustion. He does not believe they can perpetuate their project indefinitely, of which I agree.
That's the point that I kind of wanted to get to, the exhaustion point, that they can't live out, they can't perpetuate it, just ongoing and ongoing and ongoing. I think that's the light at the end of the tunnel here, is that as Dreher talked about, there he believed, and it's just a belief. I mean, there's no writing or prophecy here, but it's just, he thinks that America or Western civilization will turn back, to God at some point. And I'd like to think so myself. I think we're kind of going one way. And like we said initially, this doesn't mean that the church is going away. This doesn't mean that the church is dead or that Christianity is lost hope. We know that's not going to happen. We know that the gates of hell can't prevail against the church and all of that. But who knows whose lifetime, but I do think we are ripe for a revival, if you want to call it that, or just a resurgence, a turning back to, biblical principles and morality.
Well, that's true. And you know what? If you can't even have a discussion about it, you've got, I think it's Richard Dawkins, maybe, who refused or declined to have a discussion with, his name evades me right this moment, one of the best apologists in the nation. And it touches back on McIntyre's comments there, the failure to be rational. And if we can't even go back to just sound, the forms of sound, logic, and, philosophical debate, where can we talk?
Yeah, I don't think they want to talk about it. I think that's the major point, is that they just don't want to. They don't want to hear any type of arguments, even though everything's right in front of their face and that they can't really deny it. There's archaeological finds all the time and philosophical arguments that they just want to ignore and things. And you can ignore things as a culture for so long, but we know that the Bible is the truth. We know that Jesus is the truth and the way, the truth, and the life. And I think, or I shouldn't say I think, I know that people will keep realizing that and keep turning to Him, because that's what Jesus does, saves people.
Amen. Amen. Absolutely.
Thanks for joining our discussion today, where the discussion is always outside the box, inside the Word. Thanks for listening.